Hey, Sound Opinions listeners, if you support us on Patreon, you get to listen to our podcast ad-free on Patreon.
One, two, tres, cuatro.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we talk about supergroups. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. First, we talk with the most exciting supergroup making music today, Boy Genius.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
The names Phoebe Bridgers, Lucy Dacus, and Julian Baker should be familiar to Sound Opinions listeners. They're each responsible for some of our favorite albums of the past 6 years. Phoebe and Lucy have both been guests on the show, chatting with us. In 2018, these three friends put out the Boy Genius EP, which quickly became a topic of obsession for a particular subset of music fans. Greg, remember that HBO show, Mayor of Easttown? Mm-hmm. They used a Boy Genius concert as a big plot point in 2021.
I do for sure, Jim, and that's just a small indication of the excitement the trio generated with just six songs. Now, 4.5 years later, they're back with an album called The Record, 12 tracks recorded at Rick Rubin's Shangri-La Studios in Malibu. But Rubin did not produce it. The group brought in Catherine Marks along with Sarah Tudson of Illuminati Hotties, Jay Somm, and Phoebe Bridgers' frequent collaborator, Tony Berg. They signed to a major label and put out a short film directed by Kristen Stewart. Just a heads up, listeners, this is a re-airing of our original Boy Genius interview from earlier in 2023. Now, since then, their album, The Record, was released, plus their EP, The Rest, which we reviewed on the show. They played concerts all over the country, including selling out Madison Square Garden, and as well as Saturday Night Live. They also received 5 Grammy nominations.
We were very sad, Mr. Kot, that you couldn't be here for the interview, but everybody deserves a vacation. Producer Alex Claiborne stepped up with an able assist on what turned out to be a great conversation, really relaxed and casual.
When you moved to Chicago, we were spinning out. When you don't know who you are, you look around and find out.
The line that jumps out to me as I listen again and again to The Record is, when you don't know who you are, I'm going to paraphrase only slightly, you mess around and find out, which is brilliant. So I'm wondering, the three of you, is coming together again as Boy Genius for the first time since that 2018 EP, messing around, or have you all arrived at a place of self-confidence where now it's like, we can do what we want, and we want to do this?
Yes,
I love that you just asked, did we mess around and find out? Yes. I do also want to say that only one person has caught this so far, that True Blue, it's like about the Blue Line in Chicago. So shout out.
So what do you think? Are you messing around as Boy Genius, or is this, we have proven ourselves. We are the artists we are. If we want to do a side project, we can.
I think we are both messing around and finding out. It's a constant loop of self-discovery and messing around.
Yeah.
You know, like it doesn't,
like the schedule of making an album means that we could only reach so many conclusions in that time, but we continued making stuff and having conversations that helped us arrive at things.
Yeah.
But making the record was our most concentrated time of creating together ever. So
the album's like a freeze frame on a continuous conversation that the three of us just have.
Yeah.
And continue to have. I get so annoyed that as soon as I feel like I know myself, I change. It's so annoying.
Yeah.
Like the like self-discovery never ending. That's so annoying.
But this is life.
It's exciting.
It is exciting, but it's like
just exciting because you don't have to be bored.
Yeah, I'm more excited about it recently than in my past. I'd be like,
you know what? Dang. That's also an out of character thing for me to say.
We just switched. Yeah,
we just switched.
Yeah,
yeah. I was like, yeah.
Okay, so we've established that Julian and Lucy have switched roles somewhat. I know you've told this story a million times already, and you're just gearing up for the release of the record. But what was the impetus, you know, and how did you come together for this very intense period of a month of 10-hour days?
We'd been planning it forever, plotting and scheming. But yeah, like a week after my record came out, I started writing something that felt like it was a Boy Genius song. And then we just were planning on getting together and making something for 2 years until we actually got to make it, which feels really special. And I cannot believe it comes out right now. It's like a week away. Tomorrow is when our album comes out. And that is insane to me.
It's so good.
One of the real big parabola, like sine waves of like, this is the best ever, we're the best band. And then I was listening to it and like could not get out of editor brain and being this is no, this will never be good enough. And I listened to it in the car yesterday and it freaking bangs.
It bangs. Yeah.
Some might say slaps, you know.
I've always liked a record. Yeah.
It's not that I haven't liked it. It's just that I'll like things will bug me.
Yeah, totally.
I won't.
Well, that was true until I changed some of the lyrics and went back and recorded. Like, I'm meticulous in my own weird way.
I have a couple things that will stick in my craw forever, but no one knows. So I
in
don't
your
need
craw?
It. Is that
stick in your craw?
Whoa.
I think that's a thing.
Are you allowed to say craw on the radio?
Yeah.
I'm from California. I don't know about none of that.
Something's stuck in your craw.
I can infer the meaning, but
only you know, which makes it good, but also slightly worse because you're like, I'll carry this with me forever, and like no one else will know. But also,
I like if people don't know, like I always think of like people's ears are intelligent. Like when people say, I don't know anything about music, but I like this or that. I'm like, you have taste and you do know what's going on. You just know the words for it. Or like, my mom will go to a show of a local band and be like, yeah, I really didn't like it. And I'm like, the bassist sucks. Like you can't even really hear it, but the bassist sucks.
Yeah,
and that's why you
wrong.
Don't like it because it sounds bad because the bassist sucks.
Right. It's an instinctual gut emotional reaction. And then you don't always have the words to articulate it.
There's a few things that there's probably three things that I would change, which is a really low number.
Well, you can tell on this record too, the connection that you have with one another. And, you know, Lucy, you were just talking about this, a gut reaction of knowing when something is good, when you feel like the people making the music are doing it for each other. There's a warmth to it and a mutual respect and understanding. I felt that moments on the record, especially the opening track, reminded me a lot of those trio records that Dolly Parton, Linda Ronstadt, and Emmylou Harris did.
Give me everything you've got, I'll take what I can get. I want to hear your story and be a part of it.
And I was wondering if you've heard that at all, or...
No, we've all heard it, and they're all legends. What an honor to be
I like
mentioned.
The Neil Young cover a lot, After the Gold Rush.
So good.
Mm-hmm. I think most male supergroups have sucked, have always sucked. But you know, from from those three records that you know, from those records Alex mentioned all the way up to High Women today, it's like female artists have come together and done it much better and truly earned the super.
Or like Case Lang, the whole Case Lang Veers thing. And I wonder, well, and it's not to say that there aren't, because there's that thing, what, Planetarium with like Desner and Sufjan and a couple other folks.
Yeah.
And like, I think there are people who are doing it.
Was Crosby, Stills, and Nash, were they a band before they had solo careers, or were they separate?
No, they came together
after. They were in other bands like Buffalo Springfield and
Crosby was in the Byrds. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're good.
Yeah.
They're good.
Yeah, they were good. They're such tools.
Yeah.
Both Greg and I have had Crosby hang up on us when we dared ask about the $400 tickets. You know, I mean, this is the guy who sang By the Time We Get to Woodstock, We Were Half a Million Strong, yeah. Peace, Love, you know, Community, and I'll charge whatever I want. F you, hang up.
May his grumpy ass rest in peace.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was allegedly part of his charm, his grumpiness.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to be happy. I'm ready to walk into my room without looking for you.
The three of you recreated the cover of Rolling Stone that Nirvana did all those years ago with the suits. You also recreated the photo shoot of them in the colorful dresses and outfits. And I was wondering, whose idea was it? And how did you decide who would stand in for who?
I think, well, that's a fun end to the question. It's so clear.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's so obvious.
It's so obvious. And that's why it was fun.
Yeah. It was my high school friend Alex Mitchell's idea, like, years ago. It was like, if Boy Genius ever does anything again, can you please let me source these garments for a photo shoot? And then when we secured Rolling Stone, they also came up with the idea separately. And it's fun to, like, see an idea crop up from different places, and it must be good if a lot of people are having it. And it was cool. I actually got to bring her to help style the shoot. But yeah, we are each of those. We look like them a little.
Yeah.
I look exactly like Dave Grohl.
You look like Dave Grohl.
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh.
Well, and like Lucy is the tallest, like Chris Novoselic. It's like Phoebe's got the blonde hair. I figured as much, but I saw that. I think the photos of you all in the colorful dresses and stuff came out first on Twitter. And I was like, oh, new Boy Genius is coming. I can feel it. Like, yeah. I know it's.
I liked doing drag of drag.
Yeah, drag
of drag. Yes, very meta.
Now illegal in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
totally.
Okay, so a month of 10-hour days and recording this very intense period. But I gathered from the way you've been talking about those sessions, all of you, that you'd have been happy to go until you dropped every day, that it was fun. It was a joyful experience in the studio.
Yeah, and we lost our minds.
Yeah, we should have been better about the schedule. Like, I don't want to romanticize the mania of, like, there was just a point where when you're working for 7 days straight without any space, like, you're just not having any more ideas, and you push through it and eventually you come up with something, but the pushing through it actually takes longer than if you'd had a day off. So I don't want to romanticize that, but it all worked out.
But it's also difficult to, I think it's difficult, like, when y'all see, I can sense this from y'all not wanting to, like, intervene when I'm like, no, I've got this, just let me plug this, this one little setting, it's gonna be fine. And then I could sense y'all being like, whether or not this is productive, she has to do it.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I had a lot of that for y'all's process in whatever way that cropped up. Like,
well, mine's in post-production. Like, what I mean too about how it was unproductive to keep pushing through some of the days, like, I just, like, let guitar sounds be whatever they were, and then I had to spend 5 days fixing them later because I knew it wasn't right in the moment.
But so you didn't have the bandwidth to, like, find it then.
Which is why I love space in recording, because if there's a snare sound or whatever that isn't right, you're like, it's been a long day, we have to record. And then if you give yourself the space to edit it where you forget how hard the day was and you're just listening to what it is, you're like, I don't care how long it takes. It's gonna be perfect. It's gonna outlive us. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna fix it. That's something that we didn't really have in the studio because we did it all in 30 days. But we worked it out and like, I think we let those things marinate in our own frustration for a second before fixed all types of shit and that.
The other side of that to me is that the songs are solid, and so things that were like wrong in our head, even if we had left them, there wasn't really messing them up. Like, so I felt kind of like pressure. Like, I did really want specific sounds, but like, think about all those like 90s records where the snare sounds like utter.
Dude, yeah. I think about this very occurrence quite frequently.
Well, we just paid tribute on the show last week to the producer Spot, who died, who did all those early SST records, you know, and some of them really sound like they were recorded under muffled blankets in 10 minutes, you know.
So awesome.
But but New Day Rising by Husker Du, I mean, you know,
yeah,
it would be amazing if it was recorded on, you know, one track on a cell phone, you know.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely. Possibly it would be less amazing if it were pristine.
I think that's this problem with the modern way to record, is that there's so many options at your home now that like, you're not actually being creative because of the limitations. You're like, you're actually, it's more risky to sound like a cheesy, like perfect, identical the entire song snare sound.
But then it's also cheesy to choose
lo-fi
sometimes.
Yeah.
I kind of don't like when people are just pick a decade and do the decade.
Totally.
Like that's it feels like an Instagram filter to me.
Yeah.
But then people who like go in and out, I have like, I'm a sucker for like changing fidelity in a record, like Dijon, who's opening for us on our tour in June. Like, his record absolutely comes in and out of high fidelity in a way that feels purposeful the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
A Chicago musician, McKinley Dixon, does that sometimes too. Richmond before Chicago, and a good friend. I would
Well, the juxtaposition of those two opening tracks, Without You, Without Them, a cappella, Carter Family, Back Porch harmonizing, right?
Thank my father before me, his mother before him. Who would I be without you, without them?
Into the guitar riff from Hell on $20. It is fantastic.
Oh, sick.
Sorry, Mom.
It's a bad idea, and I'm all about it. Give me one more chance, and then I finally had it. When you wake up, I'll be gone again.
And we get some Moog, too, right? Is that a little analog synth enhancing $20 as well?
What did you say?
Well, we have this massive guitar riff, and then I hear a little synth, but it might be something else.
Oh, synth, in. Yeah. Synth, I thought you said sin enhancing.
No.
It was
a sin-filled analog synth.
And I was like, it is also
it is sin enhancing.
There's a blurb for the album.
Was that intentional? Let's show you the range of what
I wish rock music was still sinning. Like sometimes it just feels
so neutered,
like now it's just beer commercial is like the baseline, not the baseline. God, is the starting point for all guitar based music, and you're trying to beat the corporate accusations, not the Hell accusations. Now,
wow, yeah,
true.
When we return, we'll dig into the meaning behind the band's recent Rolling Stone cover photo, and Greg and I'll share two of our other favorite supergroups. That's coming up on Sound Opinions.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island. So we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. And we are back. This week, producer Alex Claiborne and I are talking with Phoebe Bridgers, Lucy Dacus, and Julian Baker about their new record called The Record as Boy Genius. We left off talking about the challenge of making rock music that isn't just a recreation of something that's been done before.
We just reviewed Screaming Females, and I feel like they're doing stuff that is very cool, and it sounds refined, but it doesn't sound fake. It doesn't sound like, they're doing every single thing. Like, that's an example of a recent, I feel like, rock album that is
sounding like now. That's what was so fun about the Nirvana cover, is because we're referencing a time where they were like making fun of being corporate, and on the cover of a magazine where the magazine, what that means to be on the cover of Rolling Stone has changed so much since Nirvana was on the cover. Like, it is so fun to be making a reference that's dead, kind of.
Or that's like recontextualized now that Rolling Stone takes up a different space in culture, or that like print magazine isn't the huge thing. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
It's more of a monolith of like a cultural, it's like a cultural touchstone as a brand. Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many people even have a dead tree Rolling Stone anymore.
Yeah,
they've all seen that photo, but they've seen it via social media.
Exactly.
Oh, I have like 5 of those dead tree Rolling Stones because I was stoked, and so was my mom.
Yeah, no, you should. If you're on the cover of Rolling Stone, you need to get some of those.
I'm straight up bringing a physical copy of Rolling Stone to Thanksgiving this year, so that when my extended family asks me what my job is, I can just...
Like, what are you doing? You're like, have you ever heard of it?
Something so cute. This is the radio.
I love it.
For Christmas, my dad, he's a graphic designer, and he made 3 alternative covers to Rolling Stone of him, my mom, and my brother. And like, they're the image, and they have like different headlines. I need to like put it online somewhere, but
to even things out.
He was like, yeah, just so we don't get jealous of you. We're all on the cover of Rolling Stone now.
All on the same level.
I hate to gripe about it, but my 8.5 months as music editor of Rolling Stone, we had
pretty iconic, Jim.
That's awesome.
That is iconic. That's more iconic than being on the cover.
Yeah.
No, I was fired for panning the second Hootie and the Blowfish album. Thou shalt not impede the flow of commerce.
You were fired for having an opinion.
That's iconic. That's iconic.
Yes, it was a footnote to a footnote.
If you weren't fired, you wouldn't be tight.
Tell the 18-year-olds that.
No, it's been bragging ever since.
I spoke truth about Hootie and the Blowfish.
And they couldn't handle it.
It wasn't even that nasty review. I said they were the equivalent of like milk and cookies. You know, it's a Hallmark card. It's,
If anyone said I was the equivalent of milk and cookies.
Wait, because that's the quote that's like, the opposite of love isn't hatred, it's indifference.
Yes.
Yeah.
When people say your music is mid, I want to make music that's failing spectacularly. I don't want to be mid.
I don't want to be like, oh, that was nice what you did.
The number one sin in rock and roll or pop music or whatever we want to call it is to be boring, is to just be okay. Yeah. Take chances.
It's a sin. It's a sin.
Number one sin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now I'm sinning cess. Well, I mean, there is a song inspired by Hail Satan on the record.
Yeah.
Hail Satan. Yeah. Hail Satan tonight.
Tell that story. About what was it about that documentary that connected with
you? Are you speaking to me? Are you asking me to tell you about my experiment? Or my experiment.
Whoa, Freudian slip. Yeah.
Your experiment with Satanism.
My experience with watching... I'm going to abbreviate this. I grew up super religious. I thought that being told that I was queer and that meant I wasn't allowed in church would make me less interested in God. But I was like, nope, I'm going to figure this riddle out. And so I got upset. Mm. I was like a sophomore in high school trying to read Kierkegaard and like figure out what God needed me to do and like getting into the Bhagavad Gita and stuff. So I was like, obviously spiritually inclined. And then I watched Hail Satan. And at the end of it, I was like, it was right after I had deconstructed a whole bunch about my like very zealous, intense, like anarcho-Christian weirdo cornerstone kid faith. And I was like, do I agree with Satanists? Like, is the thing my parents told me is the most off limits and is the most abominable? Am I watching this documentary seeing how Satanists worship the edification of the self in each other, mm-hmm. and seeing how there's like Satanists out here doing food drives and clothing drives and like needle exchanges and stuff for like the unhoused population in their cities. I'm like, oh, am I wrong about this? So then I wrote this tune that was like, what if I decided to be a Satanist? Would you still love me? It's, what did you say? It's the equivalent of, would you still love me if I was a bug?
Yeah.
Like,
would you love me if I was completely different?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You know how like people in relationships are like, what if I, this is a fear I actually have because I saw it on Untold Mysteries where some kids dropped a vat.
Wait, Untold Mysteries? That's awesome.
Unsolved Mysteries.
Unsolved Mysteries. There's not a show called Untold Mysteries because they wouldn't.
That should be the next album title.
Yeah, Untold Mysteries is just
a good one.
The blank TV screen. Probably the most mysterious.
Yeah,
it is so mysterious.
But when, you know, whatever, there's like that crazy ass, and it'll be like, and then teenagers dropped a vat of battery acid on this unsuspecting woman on the freeway and she burned her whole face. And like, people will be like, would you still love me if I got my face burned off by battery? Like, just ridiculous scenarios. Like, people will say that. And so I was having a scenario of like, I wonder who in my life I could tell I think I might want to entertain becoming a Satanist that would be chill with it.
And it's us.
And it's us. Y'all.
Yeah.
That is indicative of many reasons writ large that I'm a boy genius. Because I feel like if I texted them, like, I'm joining a Satanist commune, they'd be like,
live your truth.
Yeah.
Send pics.
Well,
yeah. Hit me up when you're back.
Yeah,
that central credo of do what thou will is the whole of the law. And it often gets cut off there, but the rest of it, so long as ye shall harm none. I mean, it's pretty close to Christianity, and B, it's not a bad way to live. Do whatever you want. Don't hurt anybody.
Satanism is way closer to historical Christianity than it is to current evangelical Christianity.
Yeah,
totally. Anyway, you said you had other stuff.
Will you be a Satanist with me? Mortgage off your soul to buy your dream. Vacation home in Florida, collateral the devil's repossessing from me.
So our former Sound Opinions intern, Mary Bernthal, recently tweeted, Boy Genius is the traveling Wilburys for people on Zoloft. And I just felt very seen by that.
That's good.
I think, like, Mary's time with us has paid off.
Yeah. Mary hit it out of the park. Like, when I saw that, I was like, first, I felt very seen. I was like, Zoloft gang, rise up. Like, let's go. But also, I think that's a better descriptor or a more creative descriptor. Like, sometimes I get tired of people trying to categorize any music that's not happy, happy, like, we're partying tonight. And so I was wondering, do you think that descriptor is accurate? Or, like, when people ask you, like, what is Boy Genius about, like, what do you say in that, in response to that?
Boy Genius is about us. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm. Yeah,
it's about, like, friendship, hanging out, being scared to lose each other, enjoying our time together,
laughing smiling chilling.
Some of the songs are fun, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
For
oh,
sure. Yeah. It's not a funeral procession by any means. No. Like, you guys, no,
you
have
were
bangers.
Trying desperately, Alex, to avoid that dreaded sad indie girl BS.
It's you did. Sad. And I'm so proud of you for doing it, even though it's now shown up.
Even though now we failed.
Let's put it away.
Well, I bring it up to mock it. You know, I mean, what is sad about $20? Nothing.
Nothing's sad about 20 bucks.
There's no. Nothing. Well, yeah, true. I like that when you're like, Boy Genius is about us.
Yeah.
Because our lives, like, because the life, the lived experience of a person existing in a marginalized demographic is inherently engaging with the political.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it is, it's like, what is Boy Genius about? Or like the mission statement. Someone asked us what our mission statement was.
We said do gay we crime in unison, having in never unison, spoken about it.
We were all like,
once
do
before.
Gay crime. But like, there doesn't have, like, I think it is sometimes more effective to address the political in an individual context, in an interpersonal context. And so, like, writing about my friendship with these guys, to me, is an inherently radical act, because we're like documenting friendships and relationships that exist at a time where we really need and depend on them.
Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, Phoebe. Like, for me, I tried to write mostly stuff that was like about shared experiences, because I don't want them to have to sing stuff that isn't true for them. Like, Phoebe's songs maybe come from a place that's like your life, but understandings that you've come to with us.
Oh, exactly. Or, it's like, know. It's like the, you know, the intimacy issues that I have that I'm writing about a lot on this record are things that I would bring to you guys for some empathy and perspective. In a way that I don't do on my solo albums.
Mm.
You know, I'm writing from like a self-reflective place on my solo records, and this really is like bringing kind of like some of the weaker parts of my self to my friends to discuss. Mm.
I loved your music video too for Not Strong Enough, which is just you guys hanging out at the carnival, mini golf. And I was wondering, was that a concept that you had been thinking up, or were you just kind of vlogging as you were hanging out and you saw, you know, everything that you had collected and decided? I find that it's the juxtaposition of that video where it's like, I'm hanging out with my best friends, we're there for each other, and then the lyrics, which are decidedly, I cannot be the person that I need to be for this other person. I found that juxtaposition interesting, and I was wondering if you had considered that, if that was intentional.
Well, there's a lot in there that we had already from our lives, but the concept was very much like we were coming up against the clock for putting a music video out and just like disagreeing conceptually, and nothing felt like, and we disagreed, and then the person who brought whatever idea would be like, yeah, I don't even like it enough to fight for it. Like, it was just, mm-hmm. it was just not happening. And not really what we were focusing on. And so also like always happens to us, we had like a press month a month of work in January, and the days were just dwindling, and my dad died and I had to leave town, and it was just like a nightmare, and nothing sounded nicer than hanging out mm-hmm. all day for our job in that way. And yeah, it was an amazing day. So
yeah,
we just needed it.
Also. And we did the thing that I used to do as a kid, which was like hang out with my friends and then make a video on iMovie.
It really evokes the, like, I had one of these too. Oh my gosh. Now That You're Gone by Metro Station.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. One of those two.
Metro Station. That's a throwback.
I'm burying.
What's that?
Myself.
Harder, better, faster, stronger. Is that what the song's called?
Yeah. Is it the Daft Punk or Kanye?
Daft Punk.
Okay. Of course.
The juxtaposition is interesting. I don't think that we were like thinking too big brain about it, but now that you brought it up, I think it's nice that like that sentiment, I guess you could read as like a failure, but actually it's just an admission of the truth. And you can relax into not being strong enough, and people can still accept you and take what you can offer. And I feel like that's part of being a really good friend. Is I have told friends before, like, I'm, in other words, I'm not strong enough to do whatever you need from me. And the friends that have been like, cool, you're not my entire world, and I can
talk
to anybody else, are the friends that are like still in my life. Like people who can accept what I have to give and like all my weaknesses. Those are the relationships that last. So good call picking that out.
Thank you.
Alex is the talent behind our show for sure.
Thanks, Jim. I'm very flattered.
You know, Interscope, cover of Rolling Stone. Phoebe, you're going out on this most anticipated tour of this century, really. Not to be the old guy bringing up the comparisons, but you guys brought it up first on the cover of Rolling Stone. You know, I went to Seattle. I interviewed Nirvana. They only did three interviews before In Utero came out. You know, the LA Times, New York Times, and Kurt wanted to talk to me.
Amazing.
You know, and there was this trepidation. It's like, how big does this get? They were scared, you know, of suddenly playing Reading, and they're playing Polly, which is a horrifying, the Reading Fest, a horrifying song about a rape. And you know, many people in that crowd of 100,000 are not getting what it was about. And the dope Kurt is in a dress with badly applied nail polish and lipstick, you know. Oh, they're cheering the wrong parts. And they were both attracted to that level of stadium success, for lack of a better word, and repelled by it. You know, they came from where you come from the indie world, and from a certain intimacy with the audience. Does reaching this biggest audience of any of your careers at this moment, you know, is it a mixed blessing? Does it come with some fear?
Yes.
Yes, 100%. But I think it comes with fear for ourselves and each other, not for our closeness. I think that I feel equipped to, if something bad happens, to talk either of you down.
Yeah.
And comfort you. I feel equipped as your friends, but also inequipped for this completely inhumane experience, which is fame.
I just want to say what you just laid out about like the song not coming across. I'm not afraid of the music not being understood. Like, I don't think that the songs have left room for a misunderstanding that I couldn't live with.
I think I was like about to think about, you know, Born in the USA, people playing that at like baseball games. It's like, this is sad.
Or Rage Against the Machine, like accidentally having like white bro, like
loving
totally
killing in the name of
yes
or who what's mm-hmm. the who's the politician that
Paul Ryan, apparently, Paul is the guy.
Paul Ryan.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah. Oh, I love to never
I'm not afraid of that.
I love to never think of him.
I think the closest that could happen is, like, yeah, TERFs. TERFs or, like...
Just TERFs are not welcome on
TERFs
this
are not welcome. Neolibs aren't welcome. But
Neolibs are welcome if you don't talk and you listen.
If you just... Oh, yeah, if you listen to us and you change your opinion.
If you just listen.
But there's a great Kurt Cobain quote that's like, I hate you. Like, my music isn't for you if you are a racist and homophobic.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful. Like, just to be comfortable being like, get out of my show. Get out of my show.
Yeah, but he couldn't control it, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Because they were so massive, yeah.
But I like that, you know, Nirvana probably did change the minds of so many people who could have gone a different way. But yeah, they were so massive that, of course, like, their music is being played at frat parties. That's just such a huge cultural responsibility that I don't think we're responsible for. Yeah. how our music is misheard. Like, we've tried our hardest to make it
the fact
understandable.
That, like, when we were teens, we were getting interviewed about big concepts and asked to be spokespeople is, like, so weird. Like, just because you wrote something cool, people also need to make you a reliable news source. And, like, I don't know. I don't know if it's good.
Or some kind of martyr, like someone who is, like,
or a spokesperson. Yeah, like,
yeah, a spokesperson.
I felt that way too. And then it got to me so hard. I think that's what drove so much of my, like, weird fear and obsession early on, like, in the first record, people being like, so you wrote a song about God. Tell us about everything you know about God.
Yeah. Like, you God, name three God songs.
Three Bible verses. I'd be like, I was literally brainwashed. Yeah. Come on.
Well, you know, that voice of a generation thing, going back to Dylan, has, you know, it's always a crock, and people forget. You know, you watch Don't Look Back, and Dylan's having fun. Dylan's taking the piss out of all those interviewers who are asking him big, important, heavy questions.
Love
and then
it.
You read his autobiography, and he says his biggest influence was Tiny Tim. You know?
Yeah.
Although, there's something about that, though. There's, like, a fine line, though, because I kind of don't like when people who have been given the opportunity to have something important and thoughtful to say use it to say something spectacular that's, like, garnering interest out of shock value that doesn't contribute to the discourse. I'm like, okay, so the price of me being given by life or fate this opportunity to be in, like, to have a microphone in front of my mouth. I can't believe I'm about to quote Spider-Man right now.
Do it.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Wait, Spider-Man was not the first. Right? That's, like, an old dodge.
No, that is just a, did you say a dodge?
Right?
Adage?
Wow. Wait, a dodge?
Are you going to try to drag
it's
me?
It's both.
Wait,
you can say
wait, how do you say, how do you say, life. How do you say a
really?
Swage? A swage?
I say a swage.
A swatch.
A swatch. That's acceptable. I'm not going to take any of your,
I'm going to let.
No, you're thinking of adage, like the musical concept.
The musical term, yeah.
I am.
A dog.
Okay, fine. I could learn something.
You're being dull.
In Richmond, they say adage.
You tried to make fun of me.
And then you were like, hold up. Time to make fun of you for being a dumb at E. Dummy.
Wait.
No, but there's two
also,
ways.
So you're
to look
saying
at that.
You're talking about the great with great power comes great responsibility, Peter Parker.
Is that not I didn't say Spider-Man said that. I think Uncle Ben said that. Spider-Man.
So we've been having laughs and making mistakes and being humans talking, right?
Yeah.
Alex and I feel like we're on the bed with the three of you. That there's not the responsibility to be the voice of the generation then.
Yeah,
you've done the job with the record.
All
you know?
Yeah.
The voice of a generation cannot pronounce the dodge.
I think you've lived up to the responsibility of saying important things on the record, and then you can do whatever you want.
In our radio interview today, like the only way it would have translated is if it was in this interview. Yeah, what just happened? Mm-hmm.
We are thrilled to be talking to Boy Genius, having been talking to Boy Genius, Julian Baker, Phoebe Bridgers, Lucy Dacus. Thank you so much for sharing some time with us.
So fun. You rock. Yeah.
Thank you great. So
thank you
much.
Amazing
y'all.
Time.
Thank you.
Julian, I apologize before you were off camera. As you know, we had Lucy on the show. We chatted with Lucy. We had Phoebe do a live event. And it's, we would have been happy to do one with you, but the world ended for like 3 years.
That's all right.
Still around.
I'm around. So. I survived.
Okay, good. Yeah. We'll talk more about Satan.
Yes.
Yeah. Anytime. Just ring me.
Yeah.
I never listened. I had to see for myself.
That's it for our conversation with Phoebe Bridgers, Lucy Dacus, and Julian Baker of Boy Genius. Now we want to hear from you. What do you think of the record? Where does Boy Genius rank among supergroups in your book? Leave us a message on our website so we can play it on the show. Plus, if you're currently a Patreon supporter, or if you sign up now, you can hear the full unedited interview at patreon.com/soundopinions. Coming up, Jim and I will add a few supergroup tracks to Desert Island Jukebox. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, alotrolado.org/volunteer.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we're back. With all the excitement around Boy Genius, we've been thinking about Jim's comments that most male supergroups have sucked.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know that I can sign on to that completely, but I think generally you're right on, Jim. But I can think of many female supergroups that are great.
Mm.
If I had to choose just one, I would have to go with Wild Flag.
Absolutely.
That band put out one album in 2011, which was my top album of that year. I was just blown away by how good this band was.
And they came in and played for us.
They
remember
did.
That?
They absolutely did. That band was a group that formed in the wake of Sleater-Kinney breaking up, or at least what they said was a hiatus,
mm-hmm.
which ended up lasting for about a decade. Meanwhile, two members of Sleater-Kinney, Kerry Brownstein and the drummer Janet Weiss, were looking for some more work to do.
Yeah.
And they hooked up with a couple of pals of theirs. Mary Timoney could not have chosen
I love her.
a better guitarist as well as songwriter and singer to collaborate with. And then Rebecca Cole, keyboardist in the Minders, adding a different flavor to the types of bands that they had been in before, very guitar-centric bands. Rebecca brought a totally different feel to the band's music with those keyboard textures, so they expanded. They made one self-titled record, Wild Flag, in 2011. I highly, highly recommend it. But you know what was I loved about that band was they enjoyed playing with each other. I think they all saw it as like a long holiday weekend.
Yeah, they were having a blast.
When they were on stage together, they were just, you know, Carrie Brownstein and Mary Timoney were just having a ball, like jousting with those guitars. There was a two-guitar duel going on against Janet Weiss's incredible drumming and Rebecca's keyboards. Great band, great feel for the music. I think one of the best records of the last 15 years as well. You could just about drop into this record and play any track, but I want to play a little bit of Glass Tambourine, which I think was one of the highlights of the record. I saw them play it live numerous times, and it works just as well on the self-titled record. Here's Glass Tambourine from Wild Flag on Sound Opinions.
Did I ever tell you I was looking through you? Cracked mirrors on the lawn. Still it's summer somewhere. Summer somewhere. The
Wild Flag, Glass Tambourine, my pick for a female, quote-unquote, super group that exceeded all expectations, I would say.
Absolutely. I think my problem with male supergroups is you often have just dueling egos clashing, making a heck of a racket. And you know, for whatever reasons, there are several female supergroups over the years that that just collaborate with more passion and more cohesion. And I gotta confess, I was unaware of the two albums that a trio of some of the best American singer-songwriters made together until Alex Claiborne brought it up. She was saying to me, I think that this Boy Genius record is like those two records that Dolly Parton, Emmylou Harris, and Linda Ronstadt made. And I was like, I was completely unaware of them, Greg. And it turns out in 1987, Trio, the first of those two records, and then again in 1999, a follow-up, there's a combination compilation that puts 20 songs from those two records together. I'm fans of all three of those artists. Somehow that collaboration went under my radar. It was difficult for these songwriters to make. They were friends. They were eager to do it. And because they recorded for three labels, they got a lot of pushback from the industry. And that makes sense. Why have one best-selling album when you could have three from each of them individually? Mm. Why? Because they loved singing together. They loved working together, much like Boy Genius or Wild Flag. This was a labor of love, and that love is audible. It just comes through the grooves, those three voices working together. I could play anything from the compilation of those two albums, but I'm going to go with After the Gold Rush by Neil Young, that wonderful 1970 song, title track to the album of the same name. The pathos, the sadness, the melancholia, the depth of that song has always moved me. And to hear Dolly and Linda Ronstadt and Emmylou Harris sing it, I mean, it brings it to a whole new level. It's like my new favorite Neil Young cover ever. Might even be better than the original. Here it is.
There was a fanfare blowing to the sun. There was floating on the breeze. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 20th century. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 20th century.
After the Gold Rush by the incredible trio of Dolly Parton, Emmylou Harris, and Linda Ronstadt. Talk about a supergroup, huh? Did you know that, those albums?
Yeah, no, I do. And in fact, Neil Young, I once talked to him, and he was telling me how much he loved their cover.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when you got three giants, you know,
oh,
with
man.
the voices that they have covering one of your songs. It's a huge honor. You
and
know?
Each very distinctive in their own styles of singing and songwriting. But to see them merge, like Boy Genius, like Wild Flag, it took the music to another level. What do we have on the show next week?
Next week, we've got my mixtape, Jim's favorite singles of 2023, and obituaries from the year. And don't forget to check out our bonus podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our Columbia College intern is Max Hatlam, and our social media consultant is Katie Cott. Shine, always stand out, yeah, just stand in line. Yeah.